David Enrich is the New York Times Business Investigations editor and author of the new book, Servants of the Damned, Giant Law Firms, Donald Trump, and the Corruption of Justice. The book is an expose of the power wielded by the world's largest law firms. The book follows the narrative arc of Jones Day, the firm that represented the Trump campaign and much of the Fortune 500, as a powerful encapsulation of the changes that have swept the legal industry in recent decades. Again, the name of the book is Servants of the Damned. David Enrich, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
How did this project come to be?
Well, I've been covering business and finance for the better part of 20 years now. And basically every time there's a big business scandal that I've written about, there have been one or more big giant law firms lurking in the background. And I've been kind of fascinated by and a little bit puzzled by the ways that they exercise power on behalf of clients and the way they interact with the media sometimes in a way that seems kind of self-serving. And so I've been really interested in digging into the world of big law because I think it is just such an important and frankly undercovered area in the mainstream media. And so this has kind of been in the back of my mind. And then in 2020, I started hearing about how, as Trump was making these increasingly radical arguments about the risks of a rigged election and kind of arguing against people in the middle of a pandemic using mail-in ballots and absentee ballots, I became aware that there was a big corporate law firm named Jones Day that was deeply involved in the Trump campaign and was deeply involved in his administration. And I figured this would be kind of an interesting project to kind of marry my long-term interest with these giant law firms with the work of this one particular law firm, Jones Day. And the more I dug into Jones Day, I realized it had just this fascinating history going all the way back to Cleveland in the 1800s. And it turned out that the evolution of the law firm from this Midwestern kind of business law firm into one of the largest in the world, it mirrors and I guess reflects a lot of the trends that have occurred throughout the legal industry in recent years that have made it just this kind of tireless and at times I think really dangerous advocate for the interests of big companies above just about everyone else.
When it comes to companies like Jones Day, give us a sense of how they're different, of law firms like them and the role they play in protecting the powerful.
Yeah, and the book is focused primarily on Jones Day, but I probably could have written a similar book about, any of a dozen or two dozen other giant corporate law firms is the reality. I mean, they play an extremely important role in shielding giant companies from all sorts of things that they don't want to face. And whether that is lawsuits from people who have been harmed by their products, or it's whether they want to kind of find ways to avoid taxes or skirt regulations or lobby the government or hide their money. And the list goes on and on. And one of the things that I have found most interesting in this is that, in America, we have this precept basically that everyone is entitled to competent legal counsel. And that's, one of the bedrocks of our legal and our justice system. And it's really important. And the reality is that partly as a result of these giant corporate law firms getting so big and so powerful, so many lawyers are lured there by these promises of huge paydays that oftentimes individuals and small businesses really struggle to find top-notch legal counsel because so many of them have gone to these law firms that only represent giant companies. And and at the same time, the services the law firms are providing are not usually about providing a legal defense when someone accuses the company of a crime or other wrongdoing. It's more and more frequently these law firms are providing these very lucrative out-of-court services, trying to help them craft regulations in their favor, have curry favor with governments behind the scenes, figure out ways to minimize their tax bills, things like that have almost nothing to do with this American notion of everyone deserves a lawyer. These are not the legal services that the framers of the Constitution envisioned, and they're not the legal services that up until a few decades ago, most law firms or lawyers were providing.
Let's get to the Trump part here. So what is it about the ways in which Jones Day enabled Donald Trump?
So starting, and Jones Day obviously for a long time was just this kind of big corporate law firm. And starting in the kind of mid-2000s, they developed this taste increasingly for pretty far-right conservative politics. And the firm's leader, a guy named Steve Brogan, is very conservative. He surrounded himself by a lot of other people who are very conservative, which, by the way, is fine, right? People are entitled to whatever political opinions they want. And the firm increasingly started not just taking on clients, but really taking on causes. And it was the leading law firm attacking Obamacare during the Obama presidency. And anyway, so they then in 2014 started a new practice within the firm that was devoted to helping elect Republicans to public office. And one of the first clients this new practice took on was the Trump campaign, which in early 2015 was just, you know, no one was really taking it seriously. And it was just this kind of fly-by-night operation, basically. And Jones Day and one of its firm's partners, Don McGahn, really professionalized that campaign operation and also really helped it gain credibility with conservative Republicans, because, you know, Trump was not really a Republican at that point. He is someone who had been was pro-choice, among other things. And so Don McGahn and his colleagues at Jones Day really helped Trump make inroads with the conservative establishment, which became really the key to him winning the Republican primaries, but also a hugely important thing in driving turnout in the 2016 election. And so when Trump actually got elected, he brought Don McGahn on as his White House counsel, so the top lawyer in the White House. And one of McGahn's job responsibilities was that he was in charge of selecting judges that the Trump White House would nominate to federal courts, including the Supreme Court. And McGahn was just one of a bunch of Jones Day lawyers who were imported into the administration. And there were probably 8 or 10 others in the White House alone. The upper echelons of the Justice Department were filled with Jones Day lawyers, including the Solicitor General, Noel Francisco, who is a once and future Jones Day partner, and a bunch of others as well. And it provided Jones Day and Jones Day's clients with really an unparalleled, extraordinary access to the highest levels of the American government that any law firm had ever achieved.
So when it comes to awareness from the Trump camp, I mean, do they go in this wanting these services, or do they know what they want the outcome to be?
Do you mean with their representation, like when they just agreed to represent Trump?
Yes.
You know, that's a good question. And I've heard, frankly, different people at Jones Day describe this to me in different ways. And some people who were involved in this at the time said no one was really, even including McGahn, was taking the Trump campaign that seriously. McGahn, for his part, has told me that basically he found the Trump campaign appealing in part because he really agreed with a lot of the rhetoric that Trump was using early on about the kind of the problems with the conservative establishment. And my kind of having studied all sides of this, the takeaway I have is that McGahn himself is very conservative and had very strong views about the way he wanted the federal courts to look and the way he wanted to kind of reduce the power of the federal government to regulate big businesses. And so I think he saw Trump, who was obviously not burdened with strong views on some of the major issues of the day, he saw Trump as a bit of a vehicle that he could use to achieve his, McGahn's, long-term ideological ambitions. And I think McGahn, like almost everyone else, was probably pretty surprised when Trump actually won the election. But I think it quickly became clear at that point that McGahn and a bunch of his colleagues at Jones Day were in this really unique, once-in-a-lifetime position, really, to just very quickly achieve so much of what they had set out to do. And the remaking of the federal judiciary, I think, is the clearest example of that. And Trump's greatest legacy and longest lasting legacy probably will be the three justices he named to the Supreme Court, but also on the lower federal courts as well, which are now jammed with relatively young, very conservative lawyers that are going to be making decisions that affect everyone for the foreseeable future. And again, depending on your political views, that's either a good thing or a bad thing. But what I think is undeniable is that the power that Jones Day and its once and future lawyers wielded in remaking the federal government, I think that is undeniable.
One of the things that you learn in the book is the clients of Jones Day, of not just Trump, of course, but Big Tobacco, the Catholic Church, Purdue Pharma, Russian oligarchs. It's a hell of a list.
Yeah, Jones Day prides itself to this day on, I think, not having any sensitivity whatsoever to representing clients that many other law firms and lawyers view as almost untouchable. And I think RJR, the tobacco company, is probably the clearest example of that. And even some of the firm's senior lawyers are really squeamish about the work over the years that they've done for RJR. And in part, even if you agree that every company is entitled to, you know, lawyers that will do whatever it takes to win, some of the tactics that Jones Day has used over the years have really pushed the envelope, I think. And that's true for a bunch of the other work that they've done for other clients as well. And so you can kind of, a lot of people who have read the book or have heard about this book always say, well, isn't it true that everyone deserves a good lawyer? And so how can you critique a lawyer or a law firm for representing these, you know, quote unquote, bad companies? And I think the easy way to answer that question is that even if you agree that the worst companies in the world deserve the best lawyers in the world, even if you agree with that, that does not entitle those companies to lawyers who are going to push the boundaries of ethics or the law, which Jones Day has been accused of doing in some cases. And it doesn't entitle you to out-of-court legal services. For example, like lying to the public about the dangers of tobacco and nicotine, or bullying local officials in small towns in Massachusetts into abandoning tobacco regulations because, you know, you're a big high-priced corporate law firm is sending you threatening letters. So there's a limit to the legal services to which humans and certainly companies are entitled to. And I think a lot of the work that Jones Day and other giant law firms these days do is really, I think it is well beyond what you would, even under the most expansive definition of those services, what would be you'd consider someone to be entitled to.
When you look at it in its totality of not only this firm, but others like them, what's your takeaway of what needs to be done or to make things fairer?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first and most important thing is just having I think it's valuable for people, for the public, to have a widespread recognition of why it is that the American justice and legal system has become so lopsided in favor of giant companies at basically the expense of everyone else. And the answer is that the best and the brightest coming out right out of law school tend to gravitate toward these giant corporate law firms which don't even have practices representing individuals or small businesses. And they gravitate toward these giant firms because they are dangling huge paydays and the promise of millions of dollars a year if you enter into the partnerships after several years of the firm. And so, and one of the things that I hope that this book does, and that I hope that it spurs more journalists to engage, to really scrutinize the inner workings of the legal industry and pay more attention to lawyers, not just as sources of information or as kind of side actors in big dramas between companies and people, but to really focus on the lawyers and what they're doing as they're essentially big businesses that deserve the same rigorous media attention that any other big business would receive. That's been one thing too, is that I think there needs to be a much more robust, honest debate at many law schools about the type of work that lawyers should do, want to do, and what they can expect to do if they join big law firms versus doing other types of law. And look, it's tricky, right? Because there's a lot of students come out of law school with huge debts, or at least not much money. And it is, I think, very enticing and understandable that a lot of people then, you know, if you can just immediately out of law school in your early or mid-20s, score a couple $100,000 a year to go work at a big firm, that's really tempting. And I get it. But you also need to, I think it's valuable to have your eyes wide open about what you're getting yourself into. And I think law schools could really be having a much more robust, candid discourse with their students and among their faculty about whether this is what you want to be training students to be doing.
David Enrich is the business investigations editor of the New York Times. He's author of the new book, Servants of the Damned, Giant Law Firms, Donald Trump, and the Corruption of Justice. The book is published by Mariner. David, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Again, the name of the book is Servants of the Damned. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.